Welcome to the Rehab Lab. This podcast is sponsored by Elevation Medical, and I'm your host, Joe Lemon. Today's special guest is with Christy Oliver, aka The Brit. Now, we call her The Brit because she was born and raised in the UK and has over 30 years of experience working in the animal rehab market. She's a veterinary nurse, certified canine rehab practitioner, as well as specializes in Reiki as well. And one of the reasons why I really love this conversation, because we don't only get into the science of how she applies different modalities, some of her background and understanding soft tissue and biomechanics, but also really the art of it, right? Because everybody's so different. Every body is different. Every pet is different. Even though the structures are the same, emotions and the temperament of each and every individual varies, right? And so we really break that down and when to apply the different modalities and the different techniques at the right time. I really enjoyed this conversation because she's so experienced and she understands the nuances of how not to just follow a cookbook recipe approach for everything. And so with that said, let's get right into today's conversation with Christy Oliver, aka The Brit. So you know what? I am so glad to have Christy. Oh my goodness. Yeah. We even talked about this. Christy, aka The Brit Oliver, onto the actual podcast. You know, so we were having too much fun. I'm thinking, like, I have nothing but images of you coming into a hallway, like walking into a vet clinic, like with full on uniformed out, ready to take on the world. Like a cat suit, you know, like, I mean, so that's how we start this actual podcast. You know, I'm really glad to have you on the actual show on a Friday and to have fun doing it. So welcome on to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super, super happy to be here. So thank you for taking time out of your day. I know, you know, we've got that East Coast, West Coast thing going on. So, you know, I'm super, super happy. Thanks so much for having me on. Well, yes. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, all vet techs, all vet nurses, all vets, we all wear those superhero capes when we go in, you know, when we go in and do practice every day. So, you know, each of my fellow companions in the veterinary world, you know, we're all superheroes. So I think that. We're all superheroes.
No. So, you know, what's funny is I do want to share this really quick story about when I was debating about whether I could become a cat guy, because I love dogs. I mean, I have a Boston Terrier and he's a handful, he's full of energy. And he thinks he runs the house next to my son. So my son and my dog run my household, which kind of explains a lot. And my son's 4 months old, right?
So I should have a shirt that says chaos managed by dog in Boston.
And so I was like, you know what? I think we should get a cat because cats are like entrepreneurs. They're like me. They're independent. They can do their own thing. So we go down to our local rescue. And it's this cat named Nacho. It's an all black cat.
And
Nacho Libre was what I was thinking here. Like, he starts climbing the walls and he's jumping on me and my wife and he's ready to roll. And I'm like, I think he likes me. And then I'm like, after my, you know, seventh or eighth like scratch, I'm like, yeah, I think we need to get a dog.
It's funny. One of my clients from my previous practice in New Jersey, she, right as I left, she bought me a mug. And it's a constant reminder that they say, you know, cats don't have owners, they have staff. And I think it's true. You know, you have these loyal dog owners and dogs just want to be with you and they just want to please you and they're like, what can we do to just make your life complete?
That's right.
And cats are like, I don't care. You know, cats are like, you are here to make my life better. And I think, you know, the Egyptians used to worship them as gods and cats never forgot. It's in their DNA. They have a little strand of DNA that sparkles, and that DNA will never ever be released. And, you know, cats will always be, you know, have this god complex where they're just like, you are here to please me.
And you're on my payroll, clearly, you know, like I'm right here and you're clocked in for a reason. But so how did you get started in this world? I mean, obviously you have a huge heart for animals.
Oh, lummy. Now, I mean, you're talking about, you know, when, you know, Moses parted the Red Sea, going back, you know, like that far. I've been like, somebody asked me the other day, like, how long have you been a veterinary technician or a veterinary nurse? And I was like, you know what? I haven't thought about it in like 20 years, and it suddenly dawned on me that this was year 30 for me, and I was like, oh dear.
That's amazing.
But I've always, just ever since I was little, I've always been drawn to animals. And I think, you know, I always wanted to be a vet. But, you know, school wasn't exactly fun for me. And, you know, when I finished up, you know, my schooling, you know, I had to really look at, say, you know, well, I still want to do this thing. But, you know, my qualifications weren't good enough to get into vet school. And, you know, my folks, bless them, you know, they really wanted me to do whatever I could to be who I wanted to be. And, you know, and so I looked into it, and veterinary nursing had me written all over it. And I'd say the rest is history, but.
Well, I mean, hands down, techs and nurses are the real heart, I feel like, and the body of most clinics, you know, and yeah. because you're hands on the most, it seems like. And so could you, yeah. you mind just kind of walking through your experience a little bit, and maybe how that's evolved over time, because 30 years in one industry, you've already seen a thing or two, and maybe has a couple different ebbs and flows along the ways, right?
It's been a ride. It's been a ride. And I think the veterinary profession as a whole, just, you know, seeing it evolve so immensely over, you know, especially over the last 10 or 15 years, where we see, you know, nurses and technicians, you know, carve out their own space in their world. You know, it used to be that, you know, you got married, you had kids, you know, you were a veterinary nurse up until the time you had kids, and that pretty much was like the end of your career. You couldn't really progress. And, you know, now we've got vet tech specialties in, you know, a number of different, you know, specialties. You know, you've got equine medicine, large animals, veterinary dentistry, emergency and critical care rehabilitation. So, you know, we're like the nurse, almost not quite the nurse practitioners, but you've got so many specialized registered nurses in the human world that specialize. And now we've got this awesome opportunity to do that in the veterinary field as well. So, you know, it's good that new veterinary technicians and veterinary nurses have the ability to really truly carve a career path for them, you know, and find what really kind of what makes your heart beat faster doing, you know, find your passion. I mean, I think if you find your passion in your work life, you know, you'll never technically work again, because, yes. you know, each day, you know, you live, you know, to go and help, you know. So yeah, my career's taken me obviously from England. I'm an English trained veterinary nurse. I've got a diploma through the Royal College of Veterinary Surgeons in surgical nursing. So I've always been interested in like the biomechanics of the body. I'm an anatomy and physiology nerd, you know, movement, function, because, you know, to understand how the body works is to understand how the body fails. So, you know, we see, you know, movement dysfunctions, and we see, you know, surgeries and injuries. So getting involved on the surgical side of things kind of opened my eyes to the rehab side of things. And I've been rehab certified through the University of Tennessee and Northeast Seminars for 16 years now. So I've just been doing rehab for almost half my career. And it just boggles my little British brain that, you know, I've been blessed and given such a wonderful opportunity to kind of find my passion and my drive. And it also took me across the Atlantic, much to the chagrin of my mum. You know, I went in and I said, I've got a new job. And she's like, well, that's amazing. I said, it's in America. And she tried so hard to be like positive, but she knew that I was being... I don't know, maybe she had a party behind my back. She was like, thank God I got rid of that one. One down, one to go, you know.
I doubt it. I mean, so you know what? I'm really curious. So overseas is like vet physical medicine side a little bit more, let me say this, a little more established. I mean, because here that's like that was such a newer thing for patients to understand coming from that.
No. Absolutely. It's surprising, you know, with the legislation that governs veterinary surgeons and veterinary technicians in the States, it's a completely different level of training in the UK. And the physical therapy side or the physical rehabilitation side of veterinary medicine is kind of driven by veterinarians and physical therapists in the UK and not so much by the veterinary nurses. I mean, they are involved, but the training and the education is a little different. So, you know, there are some great programs that help with, you know, they do a hydrotherapy program in the UK. But, you know, the training over here is a lot different. And I'm, you know, fortunate to have done both the rehab program and my VTS, you know, so I have my tech specialty in rehabilitation as well. So, you know, I don't see me doing anything else at this point.
No. I mean, honestly, I think it's beautiful just to have kind of this, that wide range of experiences on two different continents, right? I mean, kind of have and really be able to see how two different cultures kind of go about trying to attack the same problem. I mean, so, you know, are there different nuances in how they go about approaching things? Because on the human side, for instance, we've noticed that over across the pond, right? Like, you know, things are a little bit more gentle when it comes to doing soft tissue work and those type of adjustments. Is that the same type of care that you've kind of noticed on the animal world, or is it more a little more aggressive or a little?
No, I think, you know, the rehabilitation side of things in the UK was kind of just starting to kind of become a word as I left the UK. So things have progressed, you know, in leaps and bounds now, you know, and a lot of the big referral hospitals in the UK have, you know, a physical rehabilitation department with, you know, and which is fantastic. You know, and it's awesome to have a collaboration with like the human PTs because they bring such a different perspective to it. You know, they've got a lot more experience with like that hands-on training. And I think, you know, across here in the States, I think things like that are starting to emerge. You know, like rehabilitation in the US has been, you know, up and coming and has kind of exploded, you know, into the focus of the general public and to the general pet owners over the last sort of 10 to 15 years. So, you know, a lot of people are questioning, you know, well, I had a cruciate surgery, I went to PT, my dogs had the same thing, why aren't they getting it? So, you know, more and more insurance companies are covering, you know, physical medicine and regenerative medicine. And so we're able to treat, you know, we're able to treat so many more conditions and help with so many more conditions because we have, you know, like the PZO wave, like the shock wave, we've got so many more tools and modalities at our disposal to help make these pets feel better. And it's, you know, it's important. It's important.
I love it. So you know what? I want to dive into your day a little bit because you are a little bit shockwave. You know, I just want to understand. I mean, you have a wide range of experience from using lasers to thermotherapy. Mm-hmm. You do a lot of manual therapy as well, if that's correct. Aquatic therapy and now shockwave. So like, how do you know when to kind of mix in the right ingredients? That's kind of always one of my questions out to people. It's like, whenever you have so many tools at your actual disposal, you know, a lot of times most people just have a hammer and they say, all right, we'll just bang away at everything, right?
It's true though. I think it's really important. I mean, I'm going to use your analogy. You know, it's a great analogy. You know, the craftsman is only as good as the toolkit that they're given. You know, you give one person a hammer and they'll bang away at everything, but you give that person a hammer and a chisel and things change. They start doing directly, you know, and the detail becomes finer. So I think, you know, the more tools that you get to perform your artwork, you know, the better the outcome. And you've got this great toolbox to pull from, you know, whatever you need. And I mean, you know, we see sometimes, you know, people come in and they'll be like, yeah, TPLO gets yada, 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 yada. Yes. And I'm like, you know, this dog is totally different from this dog, you know. And the first time that I gave a lecture on like soft tissue, I was like, so, you know, you use your hands. I mean, these, you know, your hands are your best tools, your eyes, your ears, you have to look, listen, and feel. Those are the three biggest things that we use in veterinary medicine, no matter what discipline. And tissue talks to us. You know, you can kind of, you know, come along and kind of, you know, gently poke and prod, go a little bit deeper, you know, and the tissue will kind of respond to your touch, and so will the animal. So the recipe of the day almost is going to be dependent on what is sitting in front of us and what is sitting in front of me and how that dog is doing. I'm going to, you know, rely on the information that the owner has given me, like, how are they doing? How have they been? You know, is anything better, worse, the same? And then I'm going to look to kind of improve on that and hopefully, you know, get to the point where they've, you know, they're better, they're moving better. So it's kind of, I don't cook. I will tell you this, my husband will tell you, I will literally burn a boiled egg. Like, it just, me and cooking.
It's not that hard to do.
It's not that hard to do, is it?
People laugh at us. It is not that hard to do. Yeah.
No, it's not. I cannot cook to save my life. And I think, you know, my husband's very good about, you know, I'll open the cupboard and I'll be like, we got nothing to eat. And next thing I know, we've got this a la carte, like five star, God knows what, sitting. And I'm like, where did that come from? He's like, you just have to pull it all together. Yeah. And he's right. You know, I mean, I just have, we have, you know, given all the tools and all the cooking recipes, I have all the stuff at work to be able to make a good recipe that fits with the case in front of me. So that's, you know, there's no strict, hard and fast rules about, you know, what do we use and what do we don't use. It just depends on what's in front of me and what I know I can use without causing injury or harm.
I love this. I love this. I love the fact that you talked about your best tools are your eyes and your ears.
Yes.
And, yeah, I mean, because, you know, being able to assess, I feel like is the ultimate tool, right? I mean, and it's so easy, I think, when you have a lot at your disposal to just grab the hammer, grab the chisel, grab the saws, or whatever else is in that box, right? The laser, you know, the shockwave, or the aqua therapy, whatever's going on, and throw it at it. But being able to assess. So let's kind of walk this out a little bit, if you don't mind kind of going into depth a little bit. Yeah. I think this will be fun. So, you know, whenever you, because treating humans, you know, you could assess my tissue, and I'll jump and say, ow, that hurts. And I'll tell you that's a level 5. And you're like, okay, 5 out of 10. And then you know that, you know, I'm a softie. And so that my 5 is really only like a 3. and you can read through the lies and say, okay, that's not true. That's only a 2, you know. but how do you assess an animal whenever they kind of jump and they give you a look? Because sometimes they can be so stoic. They can be so like, just, you know. Yeah. I feel like trying to assess an actual animal can be really difficult. Beauty is that they don't talk, which is probably amazing, but
I don't know, unless you're my cat, because he just rolls around going meow 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 and you're like, I know. And the weird thing is you respond, you're like, I know, I'll get there, hold on, give me a second. Animals. Yeah, I know. And then half the time you think, I'm just talking to myself, does he understand? And I've gone completely cuckoo. But you're right. I mean, you're absolutely right. You know, I mean, people, I mean, apart from the fact that, you know, working on people, ew, gross, which is why I work on pets. But at least I would hope that people don't bite you. You know, you would sort of, you know, do manual therapy on a person, then they don't whip round and like smack you or bite you. But those are the things that we're looking for. You know, you're right. So you've got pets that are super stoic. And you know, the practice that I work at, which, you know, I'm blessed to work with such an amazing group of people. And we're most of the department, especially in rehab, we're all fear-free certified. So it's a way of decreasing animal stress when entering a clinic through, you know, like smells, we use adapters in the wall, fear-free handling techniques, and then getting them comfortable so that we can perform treatment. Because I mean, stress levels will change the perception of pain. Mm. You know, you get that adrenaline rush, and then, you know, and how many owners have come into the vet and they've said, well, my dog was limping like an hour ago, but because they're at the vet and it's like the vet, you know, nothing good happens at the vet. There's usually something sharp, something up the butt, and they leave very, very confused. So, you know, they always get that adrenaline spike when they hit the vet, and that will suppress, like, you know, your pain receptor, you know, suppress pain. So it's important to use other things. So we've, you know, increases, subtle increases in heart rate, the body will tense, you know, they'll be lame, you know, the tissue will kind of be very, very tight. It can be warm, it can feel knotted, you'll get like a lot of spasm where, you know, you come very gently palpate down the tissues and all the dog will jump, pull away. But, you know, the biggest thing is listening to the owners. You know, you're right, dogs can't talk, cats can't talk, pets can't talk. You know, we rely on their human interpreters almost. And, you know, it's very, very important to listen to your clients. You know, it's so easy to kind of brush that aside and just be like, well, the pet's here, I can see what's going on. Yeah. But, you know, subtle changes in behavior, posture, eating, you know, can give you a bit more of an idea of, you know, the pain condition that the pet's in and fix it that way. So
I'm really glad that you brought that up because you're so right. I mean, like a lot of times, even the owners, like, you know, normally I'm running behind everywhere I go. So I'm rushing from one place to the next. I'm stressed, right? Probably. And then my guy, Jasper, feels that stress as I take him into the bed. And he's probably like, all right, Joe's stressed. I'm going to be stressed because, you know, I'm in charge.
Right? Yeah, so you say.
Exactly. Yeah. So during last year, during COVID, right? Like whenever, you know, most clinics had to separate the actual treatments from the owner. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming that I had to take an extra level of, assessing and trying to set the actual stage. Like, were there any tips and tricks that you rolled out there to kind of help out with that process?
I think it's, you know, the whole COVID situation has really changed, you know, how we perceive medical care, both on the human and veterinary side. Mm-hmm. You know, from the veterinary standpoint, you know, we've done a lot of curbside. And, you know, that's meant that we've not been able to have our clients in with us. And we take their precious child away from them to go do a treatment and then bring them back. So we, our clinic, you know, for rehab and stuff, we've been videoing and photographing all our sessions and then emailing it to the clients.
Yeah, I like that.
So they still see that they're part of, you know, part of the treatment. You know, we'll video the shockwave treatments, we'll do the treadmill sessions, you know. So we have like a catalog and a library of, you know, pictures and videos, you know, that we send to our owners. And I think that has helped immensely. And then just being available, you know, through email, you know, I mean, everybody has a phone on them now. So just having clients say, hey, you know, in a couple of days, shoot me a video, say, you know, like we've done some shockwave to hips and elbows, you know, send me a video in like 24 to 48 hours and just let me know how the dog is moving better. And the video will pop up and I'll be like, okay, this looks a lot better. Because I think when you're at home with an animal, you see them every day. And sometimes, I mean, a lot of my owners, they're really, really tuned to their animals and they know and they pick up on those little subtleties. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for us to come in, you know, a couple of times a week or weekly, you know, we see some of the more like the littler changes, you know, we know what we're looking for with like lamenesses and stuff. So, you know, watching a gait, and they tend to be more relaxed when they're walking at home as well. You know, they're not kind of like up on adrenaline and being like, okay, who's going to stick something up my butt? Who's going to stick, you know, so we try and make it fun. You know, we do like, you know, special treats and reward systems, you know, we use soft voices, you know, we don't have any loud sudden movements. Mm. So we try and make them feel as comfortable as possible.
I love the fact that you guys are doing those videos like before and after. And I think that has to be major from the owner standpoint, but also that post-treatment follow-up to really understand what's happening to the actual tissue or to the actual gait or whatever's going on at the moment, you know, within that 48-hour window. So I want to talk about your different tools now a little bit, because you're right. The best tools are your, you know, eyes, ears, hands, right? And so after you kind of assess the body properly, like, do you use the actual shockwave to help kind of diagnose or help try to localize and find where those lesions are? Have you used it from that standpoint? Because on the human side, that's a big deal of how they kind of like to look at using the actual shockwave is for diagnostic capabilities.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for like the humans, I mean, depending on the size of your of your dog? I mean, to use it as a strict diagnostic, you know, as far as, you know, like tick, 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 you know, oh, there's a trigger point, we're going to treat that here. You know, I mean, if I'm working on something the size of a Yorkie, then I'm going to use my fingers because the probe would basically be almost as big as the dog. Yeah. So, so, but I think, you know, it's been, I mean, I do a lot of manual work. I mean, you know, coming from the perspective that, you know, everything in the body is connected, you know, the muscles are connected, nerves are connected, there's fascia lying over the whole thing. And your fascia is basically a whole bodysuit of tissue that creates its own set of problems. So I'm gonna, you know, kind of come in, I'm gonna have a feel, I'm gonna be like, yeah, this area feels tight. And then it's a lot easier to kind of shockwave an area and use the piezo wave for a, you know, set area, and then kind of use it to take down a couple of trigger points, but then constantly coming back and reassessing the tissue and then being like, okay, well, we've taken care of this. And as you peel away kind of like the levels of the onion, as you go through, you know, you'll find it's not usually just one trigger point, because one will release and you've got another one underlying it or next to it. Nice. So kind of just working your way through this little patchwork of tissue, kind of taking care of all of the postural stuff, which is typically from like chronic postural change. And, you know, I'll stand on my soapbox for hours, so watch out.
No, please.
You know, about offloading and about, yes, so we've had a cruciate issue, we've had an elbow issue, but understanding like normal biomechanics and normal tissue is key to understanding when it all goes wrong. You know, I've said in the past, you know, we are like the rehabilitation practitioners are the kind of car mechanics of the canine world. You know, if you understand how it works normally, you're better placed to understand how things go wrong when you get, you know, like an offset wheel, which is a lameness. You know, you're going to get axle problems, wheel alignment issues, and it's going to make the whole car shake. And it's the same with dogs and cats. You know, they have these shifting lamenesses that create lots of soft tissue issues, you know, fascial tie down. And, you know, since having Cindy's magic machine, you know, we've been able as a group to kind of fix more, you know, make them feel more comfortable by unwinding some of those tissues, you know, treating some of the more chronic cases, you know, with like degenerative joint disease. You know, we're not looking to fix a degenerative joint disease. There's no way to fix it. But what we do is we manage and maintain the symptoms. So, you know, pain, inflammation, decreased range of motion, are all, you know, it's all part of using the piezo wave to help improve, you know, pain, inflammation, quality, improve quality of life, and then decrease the swelling and improve the joint range of motion so that they move better. And if you free up a joint by helping to make it move better, the muscles around it will start to behave better. And you'll see sort of these longer term effects. So you can start kind of getting the, it's like starching a really, really crumpled shirt. You have to start really, really small. And by the end of it, you've got this beautifully steam pressed shirt. And, you know, we look at the same thing with our dogs, you know, and our cats is, you know, getting in and just peeling away at all of the chronic postural stuff and using different tools to kind of decrease the wrinkles, basically.
No. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I love this conversation, and thank you for kind of rolling that out, because I'm hearing a couple things here. One, I love the fact that you're speaking towards the art of kind of how you go about peeling back that onion. And I think that all physical medicine seems to have a layer of like art to it, right? And but there's also a strict science, right? Because you have to understand how the body operates. You have to know how it performs when it's at its best, so we can at least get it back to functioning well. And you're looking at it holistically. This is not just all right, we have a knee issue, so we're going to get to that knee, and that's, you know, that's it, and you treat the knee, and then you know, and then, you know, wash your hands, we're off to the
next. Exactly. It's like whole body medicine. It's not just, you know, it's not just focusing on, you know, the one thing. Yes, they come in lame, but, you know, they could be lame for so many reasons, you know. And, you know, it's helpful to understand all the surgical side of things and what the procedure involves, because, you know, you've got the way they're positioned on the table is going to change their biomechanics when they wake up, you know. So everything that we do as a veterinary profession changes and alters, you know, pain responses, postural changes, you know. So, you know, it's our job to kind of come in and help those pets recover and make them feel better.
Love that. Love that. All right. So with the manual therapy piece, because you mentioned that you do a lot of manual therapy. Now, mm-hmm. is there a threshold where you believe that combining the shockwave with manual therapy in the same session, that maybe it could be too much? Like if you're putting too much energy into the tissue or too much manual work on, too much load on that tissue?
Yeah, you have to be really, really careful because, I mean, you've got certain conditions. Like if you've got a dog with, you know, cervical neck issues, mm-hmm. there's going to be a lot of cervical tightening around the muscles in the neck. Now, if there's an underlying instability in the neck, or if they've got like a partially herniated disc, or if they've had surgery, mm-hmm. you do not want to be that person that goes to town with your PZO wave and your manual therapy and release all the tension in the neck, because it's actually going to make the animal worse. You know, you have to be mindful of what you're treating. You know, is it the muscle going into a protective mechanism to help support the area because it's weak or it's injured or it's damaged? You know, you don't want to be in there kind of, you know, rubbing away and poking away and pounding away and or doing all your thing. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden the dog's, thanks, I feel great, but I can't actually get up, you know? So it's, you have to be really, really, really careful. And, you know, if they've got perfusion issues, you know, if they've got renal issues, if their blood pressure is increased, you know, if they have malignancies, or if they're really, really old, you know, the body will release these wonderful endorphins. And I don't know how many people have ever had a really good massage. Yeah. The first thing you want to kind of do is come home and like crash out, yep. because your body has gone into kind of recovery mode. And, you know, I do like to have my patients walk out because it tends to make us look bad if they have to be carried out. So you have to be really, really careful because the body will respond to what you're doing to it. So, you know, you don't want to overdo it, you know. So we tend to, you know, our treatment protocols, especially with the PZO wave, you know, we're going to have a, you know, a way to gradually introduce, you know, set modalities in combination with manual therapy so that they get maximum benefit. But, you know, we're typically going to see them sort of, you know, anywhere from 1 to 2 weeks for like 3 to 6 treatments. So it can be anywhere from like three to six weeks that we're going to treat them, but constantly reassess as they come in and see where we're at. But yeah, you don't want to do it all at once. No,
there is a limit to it, right? Yeah.
Yes, there is definitely a limit to it.
You know, it's kind of interesting because at least on the human side, I can kind of speak to this. Is, you know, here in the U.S., obviously, more is better. The more you know, more power, more depth. You know,
just, you know, go big or go home.
That's it. Give me a V12 engine, as fast as I can go. Like, all at once. And I want it now, you know, as fast as possible, actually. And so, you know, I'm constantly trying to get my clients to think about slowing down, especially if they're doing other modalities along with it. Mainly, yes. One big one is acupuncture, which is something that, yes. I think there's some great synergies between doing shockwave and acupuncture. But, yeah. but I mean, do you have any thoughts of how you might look at kind of using those two? Do you use them in separate weeks, same sessions, different days? Or maybe
again, I mean, I'm a veterinary nurse, veterinary technician, so I'm not, you know, it's not within my scope of practice to actually, you know, prescribe anything or diagnose anything or, you know, perform acupuncture. Sure. But, you know, I have a wonderful group of doctors that do acupuncture. And yes, it really, again, it's going to be based on presenting signs, like, you know, how is that dog doing today? You know, do we need to do PZO today? Is it having a bad day? Do I need to back off on some of the more energetic modalities that I have and kind of tone it down and go with kind of a little bit more zen flow? maybe do some laser, maybe, a little bit less massage, maybe a little. I found if you'd have told me like 5 to 10 years ago that I was gonna be interested in the art of Reiki. So I actually do Reiki on animals. And,
Really?
so sometimes you just got to kind of really back it down, and maybe we just have like an energy healing session and just do some hands-on, some hands-on therapy. So it's sometimes fun to kind of do the manual therapy because, you almost end up doing Reiki along with it. And the animal will kind of relax and you'll be like, I'm just going to massage over here. And so, but yeah, you mentioned like, Japanese energy healing to any scientific mind, and they're like, eh? So, but it's just another tool in my toolbox. It may be the sparkly unicorn and glitter one, but it's definitely just another tool in my toolbox. So, but yeah, I'm a huge fan of like the alternative, complementary medicine type.
Me as well. I mean, honestly, I think there's huge value in having that both Eastern versus Western medicine approach, and being able to assess where the person is in the moment, right? Like, I think that's a big deal too,
Yes,
because
absolutely.
and I think far too many times we get into the space where it's like, one is 100% wrong and always right, and we get in these camps, and and we're here locked in on medicine, or we're locked in on Eastern medicine, and we have these approaches. But really, there's a place and time for almost everything, almost, right? I mean, there's some things that we should really do, but most of the time, there's a place. And being able to assess what time and when's the right time to kind of apply those things, I think is major too, in your world, right? Because I mean, to me, it really kind of baffles me a little bit that I feel like some of the I've met some really great vet techs, vet rehab specialists, and they're able just to read the animals so well. So I'm just like, how did you know? I'm like, there was no communication, there was no text message, there was no there was no red flag, there, there's nothing going off, but they're able to just read the animals so well. So I really respect that, honestly, because I think that's a huge skill. It's something that you obviously have a ton of the time.
It's awesome to be able to, have an animal come in. When we, from the human side of things, your first thing when you sit down in the ER is you get flashed that little smiley face sign, and you're like, is your pain a big smiley face or a big angry face with lots of tears? Our animals can't tell us that, but we can tell by how their body posture is. And, we always look to have them going out a lot happier when they walk in, and being fear-free and being able to kind of bring the stress level down and having it be a positive experience both for our patients and our clients, is key to kind of, getting them to feel better. It's not just having all of these wonderful toys and techniques and things in the toolbox. It's, learning when to pull them out. There are some days I don't use any modalities at all. It's just my hands. So it every patient that we have walking through the clinic is different and unique, and they all deserve a unique approach to, to their treatment and their therapy.
I love that. Love that. I mean, I think that right there is kind of where I feel like the industry is going as well. Is that something that you feel like lots of your colleagues are also starting to adapt to, or do you feel like kind of, someone goes in trouble with that one?
It's been a very long time since I've been out in kind of like the general practice world. I mean, I have a cat of my own, and I hope that I would never turn into that client, walking in with my cat and being like, it's dying. So it's tough. It's a really hard question to answer because, everybody, you know, we are all specializing, you know, and it used to be, you know, your pet got sick, you went to the vet, and now it's like, it's almost like human medicine. You know, you're putting in pacemakers, you're getting radiation oncology treatments. You know, there are so many things that are available to like your human patients that are now becoming available to like, you know, our animal patients. And so I would like to think that, yes, you know, the vet, like, you know, veterinary colleagues, nurses, you know, technicians, we're looking, you know, it's always be in a position to learn about a new technique or what somebody else is doing. You know, the, I'm sure it's the same with the human world. You know, there are so many smart people doing so many smart things to make healthcare in the human and veterinary world better. Yes. And it's important to, you know, to continue to learn.
No,
I was just going to say, which is why I love my PZO, because, you know, it's a new thing I've learned about. And now I'm like, where was it, you know, like 10 years ago? You know, I could have been using this every day of my life, you know. So it's...
100%. I mean, it's really interesting how information travels in medicine, too, because there's so much coming, right? There's so much information. You go to PubMed and you, I mean, last time I checked, there was, you know, thousands of brand new shockwave papers and there's different types of shockwaves and there's, you know, and so which is the right one? There's radio, there's focus units.
Yeah.
And so at times it could be confusing and like, who has time to kind of dissect it if you're not in that industry studying that device, that type of technology? Like, you know,
yeah, exactly.
It'd be pretty overwhelming. I mean, how do you normally go about finding out the latest and greatest, you know, research, evidence-based type of medicine that's coming down the line?
Well, I'm very fortunate to work with, you know, someone who is extremely switched on. I mean, Dr. Brunke is like, he's like, hey, did you read this paper? And, you know, hey, did you see this? So, you know, I don't have to go searching so much because he's right there and I can just pick his brain as much as I want. So but I think a lot of it, you know, COVID has impacted, you know, our veterinary meeting. You know, I think we've adapted amazingly well. We've done, you know, people have done some great online CE, these virtual events. You know, it is a digital world. You know, you hate to admit it, but, you know, everybody has a phone and everybody has access to everything. So I think, you know, doing what you're doing is amazing. You know, you're podcasting, getting the word out, you know. I'm not terribly tech savvy. So, you know, somebody told me about TikTok and I was like, what? So, you know, I'm just about Facebook and Instagram savvy and that's about it. But it's, you know, getting our word out is, it's, you know, we do it by case studies. You know, the practice I work for has, you know, Facebook and Instagram. We have a wonderful lady, Rebecca Lee, who works in our marketing department. So all of our wonderful pictures and stuff that we've been taking, you know, we've given her an entire lifetime's worth of, you know, social media content.
Yeah.
And people look at that, they look at that vision. So I think it's, you know, a lot of getting the word out now is definitely via, you know, a digital means, without a doubt.
Yeah, you know, at times I love the fact that things are digital, and at times I hate it. You know, it's really is like, you know, I mean, it's like Mondays and Wednesdays. Like, oh, this is great, man! You just talk to anybody across the world, and you know, you do Zooms, and it's like then you already know each other now. I know that you know, on this after work, you like to wrestle and you have tons of cats and I mean, if we can have a good laugh virtually, right? But then,
yes,
at times I really do miss the hands-on piece, because especially with shockwave, you know, because I feel like it's one of those things. When it first came to me, I was like, man, what is this voodoo box?
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, no. Like, but once you experience it, it's totally different. It's a totally different sensation, especially when you
see
in real time. And that's what really kind of, you know, got me bought in and really started selling myself on, okay, there's something happening here. No. So, I mean, honestly, this has been one of those fun conversations for me too. As we kind of wrap up, any thoughts about where you see the industry going from a modality standpoint, for how you guys assess standpoint? Any last thoughts about kind of where this, digital world, being in person world is going to kind of merge and hopefully kind of make us all better?
I think you're right. I think, I would absolutely, in every rehab practice, I would like to see a PZO Wave in every practice. I think if you're serious about your manual therapy and getting your animals like feeling better, moving better, then you really need to get you need to reach out and get this, at least get a demo of this unit. I mean, we'd used Shockwave in the past, but we had the hydroelectric. So, our unit, it's big, it's cumbersome, the trode is enormous, it weighs a ton. And it was not terribly cost effective because everybody would have to be sedated for it. And I was always, the first time I saw it, I was horrified, to be perfectly honest. I was like, I never want to have that I never want to see that again. And then Dr. Brunke brought Cindy and the PZO Wave, the PZO Wave in, and I was like, oh, here we go, sedation, and it's so quiet. It's so quiet. It's just like turning on an electric, like a gas stove, and the pets are sitting there, and I'm doing a treatment, and then they're kind of repositioning themselves into the probe, and I'm like, hey. I'm seeing differences. I have like at least half a dozen clients that just come in for maintenance Shockwave now because all of the manual stuff has done its job, but the Shockwave, the PZ Wave has kind of taken it to the next level for like maintenance care. So, I'm absolutely thrilled to have it as part of our toolbox. I really am.
That
Really
was
am.
some very kind words. And look, I'm really glad that you and Cindy had a chance to meet up and really try to connect, because I'm just glad that people are helping their pets get healthier, because that's what it's about. And if you guys are getting great outcomes, that's what matters the most. So that's been really great for me to hear on the other side as well. So I appreciate that.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you for, taking the time to have this rather splendid conversation. And we should talk more about cat wrestling.
I'm telling you, the next time we talk, you might see me full head suit, and you never know. You never know. I'm gonna have a whole separate podcast about my after hours wrestling.
Nobody talks about Fight Club. You don't talk about Fight
Nobody
Club.
thinks about it. It's number one rule. No. Honestly, Christy, this has been a blast talking to you. You know what? You have an amazing weekend, and I really do thank you again for coming on the show.
You too, Joe. Thank you so much. Take care.
You're welcome.